Oceanographer Dr. Sylvia Earle, the National Geographic Explorer in Residence, is 81 years old, but is still diving the world's oceans, learning about their wonders and their threatened ecosystems. Dr. Earle is sounding the alarm about what is happening below and on the surface. The oceans are being victimized by natural and man-made causes. She says we let that continue at the planet's peril. In a recent conversation, she told me the oceans are being pushed to the limit.
Well, the ocean of the planet is resilient. With us or without us, the ocean and the planet as a whole will go on one way or the other. But from our standpoint, looking at the nature of the ocean as the cornerstone of our life support system, generating oxygen, taking up carbon, home for most of life on Earth, it's where most of the water is, 97% of Earth's water is ocean. We have extracted in a few decades the distillation of ocean wildlife that has taken literally hundreds of millions of years to put into place. We've extracted 90% of many of the big fish, sharks, tunas, swordfish, cod, you name it. It's amazing that we are capable, one species, we're capable of unraveling these systems, these species and the systems that they form in such a short time. And what we put into the atmosphere is affecting the temperature of the planet, including the ocean. We've seen a decline of coral reefs by about half in, again, less than 50 years. So when I say we're pushing the ocean to limit, how long before all of the coral reefs are gone? If we're capable through our actions of seeing a decline by half in half a century, where in the next half century will the coral reefs and other systems such as kelp forests, such as seagrass meadows, mangroves, these basic ecosystems that maintain the ocean, that help maintain the planet in ways that are favorable to us? So I'm not alone in making this observation. I'm just a witness in saying, as, for example, Johan Rockström from the Stockholm Environment Institute, who heads a team of scientists who have considered planetary limits, the envelope of circumstances that make Earth hospitable for the likes of us. And we have exceeded the boundaries on a number of fronts, notably the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere that is linked directly to the burning of fossil fuels that just a week ago passed the magic 400 mark that we said if we get past that, it's going to be really tough to contain the temperature of the planet within a favorable space from our standpoint. So that's what I'm referring to, that we have come to the edge of the turning points, tipping points for circumstances that are really favorable to human civilization.
You pointed out at the very beginning that the ocean is very resilient, but if things don't change, if we do nothing to affect change in the area of the carbon emissions and what have you, what does happen? I mean, what will happen to the ocean and therefore to us?
Well, of course, it's not really definitive. You can't pin it down. Scientists are really good at being slippery when it comes to making firm statements, but look at the trends. Look at the arrows and where they're pointing. Look at Mars. There's a planet that people say, well, if we wreck the Earth, we can escape to our sister planet, Mars, the red one. But there, we'd have to start from scratch, building a life support system that has taken all preceding history, like 4.5 billion years on Earth, to get a planet that works in our favor. Instead of going to Mars or any other place in the universe, why not try to make peace with a system that we have right here that has the ingredients largely in place, even if we have caused great harm? The key is knowing. Imagine if we did not know the circumstances, that it did not have the capability that we now do have to assess the melting of polar ice, to be able to document and show the evidence of the correlation between burning of fossil fuels, carbon dioxide, and methane in the atmosphere, and the warming. And the good news in all this is we do not have to accept the direction of things as they currently are moving. We have the capacity to make a choice. We can change. And there's plenty of reason for optimism. And the key is knowing when you know you've got a problem, there's a pretty good chance you can do something about it. The worst thing is, I've got a problem, or you don't know you've got a problem, and so you blithely go on just doing the things you've always done, which will lead you to a place, lead us to a place that we really don't want to be.
You know, it's my understanding, and this may be wrong, but I've heard that there are more Midwesterners in the United States Navy than from any other part of the country, which is sort of ironic but interesting. But, you know, within the sound of our voices right now in the Midwest, there are probably many people who have never even seen the ocean. You know, how to encourage them to become really interested in what you're talking about?
Well, it's pretty clear that if you've never seen the ocean or never touched the ocean, that the ocean touches you. With every breath you take, where does the oxygen come from? More than half comes from the ocean. Every drop of water you drink, every drop of water that falls from the sky, ultimately it originates in the ocean and cycles back to the ocean. Imagine Earth without the ocean. Imagine Mars, for example. It's the ocean. It's that crazy, massive, blue mass of water that holds the planet steady, that keeps us alive. So you've never seen your heart either. Most people have never seen their heart. But you're really glad that it exists because it keeps you alive. The ocean keeps everyone alive, keeps all of life alive. Most of life on Earth actually is in the ocean. After all, the average depth is 2.5 miles. The maximum is 7 miles. And it's like a living minestrone all the way. That's where the living creatures are that generate the oxygen, that take up the carbon, that drive the nitrogen cycle, that drive ecosystem Earth. I don't fault people for not understanding or crediting the ocean for their existence. But now we know what no one in the times past could know. We did not have satellites or astronauts up in the sky looking back and not only observing the miracle of this little blue speck in a universe of really unfriendly options, but to be able to measure, to provide evidence of how the world functions and have people and instruments deep in the ocean to provide evidence and the means now that did not exist when I was a kid to share the view, to share the evidence. And computer systems that crunch the evidence, crunch the numbers, and say, look at these patterns. Now we can see what the smartest people who ever lived, even a century ago, let alone 10,000 years ago, simply could not know. We are the most fortunate generation of people ever to occupy Earth because we have the gift of knowing. And that could, and maybe should, I hope will, lead to caring. And it's caring about the evidence, caring about the future, caring that armed with knowledge, we can turn things around and make Earth a hospitable place going forward. But if we did not know, or knowing, don't care, just care about, oh, the next quarter, let's say, or maybe look at your lifetime, maybe the next quarter century, there still will be plenty of oxygen in the atmosphere. Who cares? Some might say, about our great-grandkids. Life is going to go on for me, so I'll just make the most of it. Or we could take the high road, if you will, and say, we have the capacity, those of us who are around right now, to look at the big picture and do what it takes to keep the planet steady. We can see that what we've been putting into the ocean, what we've been putting on the land, what we've been putting into the sky has altered the nature of nature. We have a choice. We can turn from what has caused the sharp decline of ecosystem Earth in a few decades, a turning point reached about 1950 that marks the beginning of what geologists are calling the Anthropocene, a place that is marked by human activity, and say we want to make peace with nature because it's nature, the trees, the fish, the water, air, the soil, all of this. We have the ingredients, all the basic ingredients to keep our spaceship in the universe intact. Or we could just merrily go on our way and act as if we don't know, to pretend that it's all about us right now.
We're talking with Dr. Sylvia Earle about the problems plaguing the world's oceans. What's the single most important thing that we as individuals can do? And again, I'm thinking kind of the Midwestern individual here. What is the most important thing as individual we could do to help turn this around?
I think the most important thing that you can do is look in the mirror and say, what am I good at? What do I care about? Am I good with my voice? Am I good with numbers? Do I have a way with kids? Am I a CEO? Am I a teacher? Am I mom, a dad, a kid? Whoever you are, you have power. First of all, take a look. It's your planet. Figure out what you personally have the capacity to do that others are not so good at doing. And use that power. Write a song. Take a kid out to a wild place, to the woods, to a lake, to a stream. Look at what you do every day with the trash you create. There is no way on earth. So be mindful, because being mindful is the key. Mindful what you take from the natural systems that support you. Know where your food comes from. Know what it takes to make a cow. And realize that there are choices that you as an individual can make to have a lighter footprint on the systems that keep you alive. That you can restore in your own backyard the systems that will attract birds and butterflies. You, in your own daily life, can choose to eat lower on the food chain. Like, eating plants makes a lot of sense when you say, what can I do to make a difference? Good for your body to think about the diet that you have to make better choices that are not just good for you, but good for the planet. Know that the cost of eating animals is really high compared to a diet that is mostly plants or entirely plants. They seem like little things, but times 7 billion add up to making a big difference.
I'd like to spend a moment talking about a couple of things that people might be able to visualize better than they can, things they can't see below the surface of the ocean. Two things come to mind. Number one of these dead zones we've been hearing about in the oceans where nothing lives, and some of these zones are as large as states. And the other thing are the plastic bags that congregate in parts of the ocean that are as big or bigger than large islands. What about these?
It's evidence that what every one of us is doing every day stacks up to a big impact on the systems that keep us alive. The plastic debris in the ocean is visual evidence, visual affirmation that what we casually use once, a plastic bag, a plastic cup, a plastic fork, a plastic plate, things that did not exist until the latter part of the 20th century, and now going into the 21st, that we got along very well for most of our history without plastic, and that it's not plastic that is a problem. It's what we do with it when we're through with it. And one-time use plastics have become a plague on the environment, because what happens when we throw them away? Use it once, throw it away. Most of it winds up ultimately in the ocean. So we can see it, and it is a problem. It's changing the chemistry of the ocean, physically a problem for fish and birds and other creatures that get tangled in the mass of fishing nets, lines, cups, the plastic bottle caps that birds ingest and then feed to their young birds, who never get to fly because they're so stuffed with the plastic that their parents bring back thinking that it might be something edible. Well, that's a problem, but again, knowing that we have the problem is a first step toward solving it. Be mindful of what you use. Try using something other than single-use plastics, knowing that every bit of plastic that has ever been made is still here. It's still around and will be for centuries, perhaps millennia. And the ocean is the ultimate recipient of all of that stuff. But it's not just the visual junk. It's the chemistry of the ocean that is the most worrisome. The ocean is changing. The carbon dioxide that we put into the atmosphere goes into the ocean. Much of it is accepted and turned into photosynthetic products, anyway the food chain works. But at a point where so much CO2 goes into the atmosphere that more it's reached its capacity and it's turning into carbonic acid. Ocean in the last decade has done an upswing in terms of acidification, and it's not an easy thing. It's actually altering the character of the ocean organisms with a calcium carbonate shell, like oysters and clams. Many of the small photosynthetic organisms that produce oxygen, take up carbon dioxide, are not able to properly form their shells with just the uptick in carbonic acid in the ocean, the acidification in just the last decade or so. The solution is individual actions that we can all take to reduce what we put into the atmosphere, what debris that we allow to flow into the ocean. Every one of us can make a difference with the actions we take or fail to take.
One of the things that that I've been thinking about recently, given the weather that has been occurring down in the southeastern part of the United States and elsewhere, is what does a hurricane do to the ocean? And does it in any sense help to restore it in any way?
Well, hurricanes, storms are just a part of the natural way the world functions. And yes, transporting heat, stirring things up, mixing the elements that are in the ocean, they transport sand over one place to another. This is a natural phenomenon, but what we're seeing now is an apparent increase not only in the number of large storms, but also in the intensity. This is not just bad news for humans who have a tendency to live along coastal areas globally. It's destructive to the natural systems that maintain reefs and mangroves and seagrass meadows and the open sea, the high seas beyond. In nature, hurricanes are not a bad thing. It's just a normal thing. But what we're seeing presently is because of the changes in the planetary systems, the warming of the planet is altering the abundance, the frequency, and the intensity of these powerful storms.
That kind of brings us back to where we started. Our time is winding down, but there's one question I wanted to ask you, and perhaps it's unfair to just give you a minute or two to answer in that, but that is, what you spent a lot of time in the water. There's no question about that. What is your most memorable moment underwater?
Oh, there's so many, but
I thought so.
I think that overall, it gets renewed every time I go into the ocean. It's the miracle of life. And the fact that every creature out there is an individual, like every cat, every dog, every horse, every human, every fish, every shark, every whale, every sea anemone, they're no two exactly alike. There may be thousands of, let's say, whale sharks, but every one has its own distinctive pattern of spots, every manta ray, every fish. And it's, you know, when we consume creatures from the sea, they're not what's, they're who's, they're individuals. And knowing that life, all of it, is a miracle, that our lives are totally dependent on these amazing creatures. There's someone I met just a few days ago in a little speck out in the Pacific Ocean called Palmyra Atoll. I'm just enchanted every time I go down into the ocean and see those faces, seeing a human for the first time. I wish everyone could go down into the ocean, not just to 10 feet or 100 feet or 1,000 feet, but 10,000 feet into the sea to see the miracle of living creatures that keep us alive.
And when you look into the eye of a whale, as you have done, what do you see?
Oh, I see myself reflected. I see two creatures living together on this little speck in the universe, thriving under circumstances that if you look out at the stars at night, they're beautiful, but they're not really a friendly place. We have the gift of life and to savor every moment of it and to share it with creatures such as whales or the tiny things, the little jellyfish, even the microbes, all of this, we're all in this together. But humans have an outsized impact on all the rest and an opportunity to be the heroes for the next 10,000 years by making decisions right now that will hold the planet steady for us and for them.
Oceanographer Dr. Sylvia Earle, she will receive the University of Missouri St. Louis World Ecology Award Sunday at 6 at the Missouri Botanical Garden, and she will appear at the St. Louis Zoo's Living World exhibit Saturday at 3 o'clock. Arts and culture programming on St. Louis on the Air is funded in part by the Arts and Education Council of Greater St. Louis, the Regional Arts Commission, and the Missouri Arts Council, a state agency. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.